Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Well, we already lit the candles to kick off the weekend, so.
Let's read it.
Yeah.
Three. We get Louie.
Go ahead and stand up for that. That'd be great.
Okay. Uh, 31 starts at, make a fine woven linen curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet with shirvim. It is to be the works of a skillful craftsman. You are to hang it on four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold, their hooks being made of gold, atop four bases of silver. You are to hang the curtain under the clasps and bring the ark within the curtain of the testimony. The parochet will divide for you between the holy place and the holy of holies. Then you are to put the atonement cover on the ark of the testimony in the holy of holies. You shall set the table outside the curtain and the menorah opposite the table on the side of the tabernacle towards the south. You are to put the table on the north side. For the entrance of the tent, also make a screen of blue, purple, and scarlet, finely twisted linen, the work of a color weaver. You are also to make for the screen five pillars of acacia and overlay them with gold. The hooks are to be made of gold, and you are to cast five bases of bronze for them. Make the altar of acacia wood 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. The altar will be square, and its height is to be 3 cubits. Make horns on the four corners of one piece. Overlay it with bronze. You are to make the pots for it to take away ashes, along with shovels, basins, forks, and fire pans, and make all the utensils of bronze. Also make a bronze grating net for it, and on the net you are to make four bronze rings on the four corners. You are to place it under the ledge around the altar beneath, so that the net may reach halfway up the altar. Make poles for the altars. Poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with bronze. Its poles are to be put into the rings on the two sides of the altar for carrying it. You are to make it with planks so that it is hollow, and it has been shown to you in the mountain. They are to make it just so. You are also to make a courtyard for the tabernacle. For the south side, there are to be hangings for the courtyard of finely twisted linen 100 cubits long. There are to be 20 pillars with 20 bronze bases, and hooks on the pillars along with their bands are to be made of silver. Likewise, for the north side and the length, there are to be 100 cubits long hangings, 20 pillars and 20 bronze bases. The hooks of the pillars and their clasps are to be made of silver. Now for the width of the courtyard on the west side, there are to be 50 cubits of hangings and 10 pillars and 10 bases. The width of the courtyard on the east side is to be 50 cubits. The hangings on one side of the gate are to be 15 cubits with 3 pillars and 3 bases. For the other side, there's also to be 15 cubits of hangings with 3 pillars and 3 bases. For the gates of the courtyard, there's to be a 20-cubit curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet and finely twisted linen, the work of a color weaver, along with their 4 pillars and their 4 bases. The pillars of the courtyard are to be banded with silver, their hooks of silver and their bases of bronze all around. The length of the courtyard is to be 100 cubits and within 50 throughout, and width 50 throughout. The height is to be 50 cubits with hangings of finely twisted linen with their bronze bases. All the articles of the tabernacle for all the services there, along with all the pegs, including all the pegs of the courtyard, are to be bronze.
Is everybody ready?
Yes.
I'm going to totally jump ahead just because I can't get out of it. But in the, it's hard for, trying to think of how to even, I don't want to put a, I don't want to put an undue amount of attention on something that shouldn't get attention, but I can't help but just like think of this. But even like last night when I was talking about like the opposition, it's interesting to me because I'm trying to think how to like say it. It's like the opposition to not celebrating Christmas. It's like let me just be like super practical.
Yeah.
So on social media, there's like all this out there.
Yeah.
And it's like what's being presented is that we are attacking people for celebrating Christmas. we're religious. We are so judgmental. And I'm like looking, and not one of you have even made it really public that we're doing this.
Yeah.
Maybe besides Sally's nail post.
Yeah.
Besides, it's not like any one of you are like, if you are a pagan worshiper, you're going to hell. And it is like loud about how like, you know, it's crazy how judgmental people are getting. Anyways, it's just, it blows my mind. So when things like that are there, I just, you can see how loud the enemy is when I'm talking about the wide, narrow place, because it is an entire community. It is an entire, it's a church community. It's the regular.
Yes.
Part of what came out of my mouth was, you even get Walmart.
Yeah.
Like you have Walmart justifying you. You have Amazon justifying you. You can't go. Hobby Lobby justifies you. Everything is justifying you, and yet you still have to be loud because there's this little group of 62 people that think that it's we're just after something a little bit more authentic.
Right.
That's it. And we haven't even said anything about it.
Right.
We're just doing it. We're not shoving it down anybody's throats. We're not, we're not judging people who, you know, we just have a conviction that we don't want to. None of you have said you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's right. Crazy to me.
Yeah.
So it's like, so then it's like the spirit like attracts itself, and then it's like super loud, and then I'm like watching how the thing that's authentic is like nowhere to be seen. So then it just makes me have even more like how he is, you know what I mean? Like in the midst of, I don't know how to explain, like the authentic walking the earth and what it must have felt like to just have even his own people be against who he was. And yet it, when his heart was just this off, like he just wanted to point people to the Father.
Mm-hmm.
And how loud
the
unauthentic is, and because he was quiet, he wasn't a king who was gonna come in, and you know, it was that I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I say all of that because what I can't get out of, and this is why I'm jumping ahead, is we are in the midst of celebrating Hanukkah, and on Shabbat it shifts into Torah portion. Also, you are to command B'nai Israel that they are to bring you pure olive oil, beaten for the light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To cause a lamp to burn continually. And I'm like, you could not have set that up in a million years.
Yeah.
Like, we as a family just chose to start on a certain date, these Torah portions, and it's blowing my mind at how, like, talk about details. Like, today, like the details, like, in today... Like, yes, we're talking about the tabernacle, but but like he's so detailed that, like, you guys, I don't have a staff that says, hey, let's count out the days to Hanukkah to make sure we land on Torah 65, so that during the middle of Hanukkah we learn about the lampstand.
Yeah.
Like, we're not there, but there is a host.
Yeah.
That is watching over this family and saying, let me line up your days. Let me line up your weeks so that this all will make sense. So that this, for the purpose, is for it to come alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's so after, I just want who I am to be alive in their lives.
Yeah.
And I can't, like, get over, like, how, I can't get over moving forward. You know what I mean? Like, I can't get over moving forward how the next Torah portion's on the lampstand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's... and we're in the middle of celebrating Hanukkah. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And what's so crazy is he's so intimate because we're not even following, like, another...
Yes.
Like, we just happened to start as a family because we just felt like we were supposed to
yes.
just read Torah. Like, it's not like it's, well, there's a synagogue in Jerusalem that
yes.
does all the...
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, we're not even in alignment with other remnant
right.
people because
right.
we're just trying to figure this out. And whatever date we started is, whatever date... we're probably doing it all wrong, is my point. And yet, he's so intimate in this that I just can't get over, like, how much he wants it to be real. So... The purpose of the details is the picture that I have is any one of you that would go shopping, I'm not going to have the right technology, but go shopping for a TV, you're looking for what dimension? Like you're looking for, right? Like 4D or like you're looking, you don't buy a TV and be like, let's get the fuzziest, most undetailed
yeah,
pixels.
Yeah.
I don't have the right right words,
yes.
but like if you're going shopping for a TV, mm-hmm. what do you want to see?
Yeah.
You want to see the most intricate detail down
yeah.
to the pixels. We don't ever go shopping for the TV and be like, nah, let's just let's get the
that makes sense.
Yeah.
yeah.
What'd you say?
Like, give me the worst one you got.
Yeah, well, the worst one, but what would be the worst one?
It's
it would be
clear.
One that's not clear.
Right.
It would be the one that's
yeah.
fuzzy. There wouldn't
yeah.
be details. It wouldn't be highlighted. The colors wouldn't be vivid.
Right.
I mean, that's the
yeah.
whole reason why you buy a TV. We get it with TV, but we read the scripture like we want an old antenna TV. and we're okay with that. But we'll invest, like, costly. Like, we'll pay money.
Yeah.
We'll do research
that's
to make
mom.
Sure that we've
yeah.
got this clear picture
yeah.
of movies. But we won't. Invest in what is the 4D of the word. 4D is the right word.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So, in us seeking out those details, that's how I see details, is making it become so alive that it's a full picture. Because it's not just about one paragraph's details. All of this is to point us to the whole thing.
Right. Yeah.
So if all of this is to point us to our Messiah, which if we all are followers of the way, but in the world sense, like we're Christians, so everything is about the Messiah, then why would we not want to worship him in every single pixel?
Yeah.
But we've
yeah.
got to figure out where is he in the pixel. Like we
yeah.
have to, so he is on every page. He doesn't just show up in Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just
yeah.
Yeah.
If I don't have the scriptures because there's so much, but if the scriptures that says that he is like the word became flesh. He is Yahweh. That means he was not a created being. He was just manifested on earth, but he always was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he is an uncreated being that manifested on earth. So that means he didn't show up in Matthew because he's an uncreated being that always was, which means he's in all of it, but we don't know where he is. So then when he does show up in Matthew and we say we're supposed to worship him, we're worshiping this far off concept or guy. And the four-dimensional or the pixel picture is to figure out where he is in everything, because then you know him more. It's like what she was saying. Like, if I know of him or I know about him or I know the concept and he died for our sins and now we're saved and so I can have a good life after I die. And that's one aspect, but you don't know him intimately.
Right.
So let me say this. We are reading about the earthly tabernacle. We know that the era that we are in now is we are the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Revelation says, do you guys know that in Revelations, who's the tabernacle? The Lamb and
yeah.
El Elyon. So Yahweh and Yeshua become the tabernacle.
Yeah.
Why would we not want to learn his ways so that then I can be a manifestation on earth, because he told us to be that tabernacle, because what's to come is to live in a tabernacle who's him.
Yeah.
And do you think he's going to be like, the acacia wood just goes out the door?
Right.
Not that he will physically be acacia wood, but there's indestructible wood is what it's founded on. That's what I'm getting at. It's not about him becoming the acacia wood because there is no temple or no tabernacle. But if he becomes a tabernacle, then I want to intimately know that he is made of indestructible things. Because I'm going to dwell one day in a place where there is no sin so that I can receive indestructible foundation. That's what acacia wood is, right? And divinity and the gold of I am going to a place where we're going to be operating in full divinity and be indestructible. That's what acacia wood and gold over and over and over again is talking about. I want to know about that indestructible, that indestructible foundation.
Does that make sense?
Because, and not to mention, I want to know about that because it's me.
Right.
So if I've been given access now, even though there's still separation, let me see if I can. How do I say this? You don't have to wait for the day. Because I get to have it now, even though there's the reality that there is coming a day.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
So
that's good.
It's like you. So then. If I want, because how many times does Paul talk about the incorruptible seed?
Right. Yeah.
So if I am born again of an, I am not a, how do I say, I am not, when I got born again, I'm not the same man with new clothes. I'm a new man in my clothes. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep.
A lot of us want to put on a new man.
Yeah.
You are a new man filling up clothes. So I am still in the flesh in the sense that I still have skin. So we're not that day that's coming is not here, but that doesn't mean that I don't have access to those things.
Right.
So if it says that the tabernacle is a shadow of the things to come, then we're still in a shadow.
Yes.
Because that means that you are a shadow of things to come.
Yes.
But how can you be a shadow of what's to come if the tabernacle is coming and you don't know what the tabernacle is?
Right.
Yeah.
And the only way that we say we know the tabernacle is by saying, well, I know God.
Yeah.
I have a personal relationship with God.
Yeah.
But you don't know about the indestructible wood. You don't know about the divinity. Mm-hmm. You don't know about the screen. You don't know about the colors. Those are all aspects of who he is, but we say we know him. That's like anyone saying, like, out there saying, oh, I know Tanya.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe parts of me.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I would think that that's kind of a weird way to say it, but if trying to think this would be like an interesting analogy. If I say I know him, but if I knew that my future was I was going to, or that my now is I'm to be him, I would assume that I wouldn't just know parts of him if I'm to be him, especially if my future is that he's what I'm going to live in. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just makes the whole gospel totally different than him being over here knowing of a thing versus knowing what it's to be in a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good, Mom.
So, anyways, I just wanted to make sure that I'm kind of jumping ahead, but I just think that that's so powerful that the lampstand is what is next. And I'm just like, even when he feels alone because he has spent your entire natural life counting the hairs on your head while you have not acknowledged any part of him, he still will say, let me show up in your details.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I just wonder, like, at what point are you going to punish me and be like, you have been so selfish.
Yeah.
And he just keeps... So anyways, that's the foundation for all this of what he keeps doing, because I want that perspective shift to happen in us. That these are not boundaries. These are not ways to stay separate, but actually to shift our mindset on this is him giving us access to be with us. So, okay. Let me see how I want to start. Just start with some mindset shifts. Well, I kind of want to review. Last week, I felt like super discombobulated. Like, I felt like last week didn't make any sense.
But I've heard that it made a lot of sense, which is awesome because I thought, like, I don't know what happened last week, but I've heard that it's made a lot of sense. So I wanted to kind of just review what I've heard came from it, and then and go from there. Yeah, so we'll just kind of go with that and see where we go. So the first thing that I had that I really want to make sure that we understand is even when we're talking about like old versus new, I think not only should we not do that, right? But also if we do, we have to make sure that we've defined the old correctly. So even if you were to say, well, the new is here and the old is gone, let's make sure we know what we're saying is gone. Because that is what then determines what you think is new.
Yes.
So what was old in our minds has been that the law is what produced salvation.
Right.
So now, therefore, I don't need the law since Yeshua is what produces salvation. Yeah. That is wrong theology and is not scriptural because the law was never there for salvation in the first place, which is why we don't need. Yeshua is not in competition to the law.
Right.
Yeah. He is the law, but we make him in competition when we say, well, even down to the sacrificial, well, the sacrificial system did this, but Yeshua did this, so therefore, that doesn't make any sense anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in competition with one another because the sacrificial system was not to give you eternal salvation.
Yep.
It was never for that. It was an earthly, well, I don't want to teach on that because we're not even in the sacrificial system, but the tabernacle was not to get you saved.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The tabernacle is the means for you to learn how to live like him so that you can have proximity to him because he will not dwell in unholiness.
Yep.
It doesn't have anything, because here's what we do is we dumb down then Yeshua and say, well, he came for salvation, so therefore I can just come boldly to the throne of grace and I don't have to be holy.
Right.
Yeah.
The purpose of salvation is to be holy.
Yeah.
Right. So we even undermine salvation of like, oh, well, that just means I get to have a good life when I die.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just gonna.
Does that make sense?
Like you're just like, do you okay?
Yes.
Let's say you have an altar call and you get saved and you have Yeshua. I'm not saying that I have the answer. I'm not judging, but I'm just gonna ask the question because this is a question I would ask myself. If the Holy of Holies was presented before me, and Yeshua truly is the veil, which we're gonna get into between me and him. Do I have any right to be entitled to be like, well, I said a prayer and hope that he ain't going to knock me dead? I don't know. It just like the fear of the Lord. I don't want to. That's where Yeshua becomes a crutch.
Yes.
And then we have no idea what holiness means and how to live in his kingdom because he is not going to allow you to say his name and act a different way.
Yeah.
So what we do is we just say, well, I'm saved by Yeshua.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, I just feel like he would just, you go behind that veil without really his name, you out.
You're right.
Yeah. But we don't know the veil because we don't know who he is. We just say we do.
Yeah.
So there's this like, I'm not trying to say that Yeshua doesn't give us access, but what I want us to understand is as a family, let's not undermine who he is so that we just say the words and think that we can have proximity and holiness and presence and not think that we're going to have to walk a certain way.
Yes.
Because the point of his death was for you to live like him.
Mm-hmm.
Not use him.
That was really
good. He came so that you could be him, not use him and be you. So that's what the tabernacle's doing. But we'll miss it thinking something else that actually causes separation. So it I don't know how to use my words for that. It's like using him is actually causing a separation because it's a facade.
Mm-hmm.
Versus saying I want to be like him, then you actually don't have separation. But being like him, you have to acknowledge the separation.
Yeah.
Is that by the Spirit untwisting anything?
Yes.
Because I know it doesn't quite make sense. I'm just saying people who boldly come to the throne of grace and don't and just use his name are actually separated.
Yeah.
But if you acknowledge that there's a separation, then you know how to use his name. You'll actually have access.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's why we don't need to be afraid of exposure or confrontation, because those are the things that actually press us through versus having that feeling of like, no, it's...
We're good.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Really good.
All right, I'm not sure even where I'm at with my notes. Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of, I want to go back to Exodus 25:8. This was just last week because this is review. Exodus 25:8. This is for me personally. I believe this is the crux of the Torah. This is the, I know, every week matters. And that's not, and I'm not saying that this is the most important week or anything like that, but I do believe that this scripture is the crux of the entire gospel. So let me read it. 25:8. Have them make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. Is that not just like the, like that's the gospel? It's Exodus 25:8. Have them make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. We know that Yeshua came to dwell and tabernacle among the people.
Yeah.
Everything is about him dwelling among the people.
Yeah.
I also read that in the future. Make me a sanctuary that I may dwell. That's what we're doing right now.
Right.
Which is something we've had to untwist too, because we thought, well... We're leaving, and he's preparing a place. Mm-hmm. He's prepared the place. He's saying, manifest the place so that I can come.
Yeah.
He's not going to do anything backwards from his scripture.
Right.
He might do it in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But the purpose is have them make a sanctuary for me so I may dwell among them. To me, that is the crux of the entire Torah, which is literally Yeshua.
Amen.
Every page has Yeshua all over it. Every paragraph has him in it. He has to be. He's uncreated. He is Yahweh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So what I want, again, in review is to understand the shift. When you're on earth and you're looking at the tabernacle, especially when we get into all of the sanctification, cleansing, and all that stuff, you could look at it as why is there so many rules to get to him? The perspective shift is he doesn't have to do that at all.
Yeah.
He could have stayed on the mountain.
Yeah.
So that I may dwell among them is the heart and character of Yahweh. His heart and character is, I want to dwell with my people. Just because he requires you to be like him and not like you does not mean that he created a bunch of boundaries to get to him. He's trying to get to you. Okay? So, he wants to dwell with us.
Yes.
That has to be the foundation, or else you're going to look at it as like, well, clearly he doesn't, because he's by the Holy of Holies, and I'm out here in the outer court, which there's a word at the end of all this.
Right.
You get to choose which court you want to be in, but we'll get there. So, he wants to dwell. Now, I want to relate this. That may seem obvious to us, but when you relate it to paganism, which is interesting with everything that we're kind of like up against. Pagan gods naturally were very separated from people. They would not come near people. Pagan gods will not come close to people because they were concerned that they would get tampered. Their character would get tampered by humans because they didn't want to be common. You're common. Pagan gods are gods. So in order to keep their divinity and their godliness, they can't come near you because then you would make them common. So they're separated. That is where that whole gods are over here, people are over here, because they will not mesh with the people that they want them to serve them because they don't want to become common. Line that up with Yahweh. He's not concerned about being common.
Yeah.
Because he's unchangeable.
Yeah.
He's not threatened by you. He wants to be by you.
Yeah.
That also does not mean it's a free pass that he's going to lower his standard of unholiness. He's Yahweh of all the gods, which means he's not going to dwell with a bunch of people and turn into a pagan community and say the only difference is I'll be common with them. That's not what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Pagan gods don't want to be common. He doesn't either, but he's willing to dwell with common people.
Yeah.
Because he actually wants you to match him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He actually wants you to become like him. Pagan gods, they can't understand that because they need to have the upper level.
Yeah.
Or the upper, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. they need to be separated. He's not changeable.
Amen.
Now hear this. You don't want him to be changeable.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
do.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
When you gotta change.
Yeah. Yeah.
We want him to be unchangeable.
Yeah.
Unwavering.
Yeah. Consistent in our lives. And,
So he's gonna be unchangeable.
Yeah.
So you gotta match him in the unchangeable.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to say, I want you to be unchangeable, and then be like, but you can change your standard for me because I'm one of the lost sheep, and you leave the 99 for the one.
Right.
So come and find me over here.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not mocking that parable. That is a parable, but it's out of context.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want, it's just the same thing. If you want him to know the hairs on your head, start to know the hairs on his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same thing. You want him to be unchangeable in your life. But then the moment we say he's going to remain unchangeable and you're going to have to match him, now all of a sudden, well, he's a separated God and that's a bunch of rules and regulations.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what actually Jesus came to get rid of all that so that I could just be with him however I want. And that doesn't make any sense that Yeshua would do that because we're going to talk about it, but the actual tabernacle is him.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about the tabernacle is Yeshua. He's in all of it. Like, his very DNA is orchestrated in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. You've got an uncreated being who has not been made manifest yet, and they're creating things on earth, and Yahweh gave the instructions to Moshe to build something. It's no different than Mary being breathed on.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different. The things that are created on earth is coming from a heavenly place. Yeshua was there. Let me just do something really quick. Have you guys known this? Because I didn't.
Probably not.
So, this is blowing my mind. This is kind of like a beyond. But we know, and I've talked about this before, that Genesis 1 is not the beginning. It's the beginning for you.
Right.
It's the beginning for Earth.
Yeah.
But it was not the beginning because there is no beginning. Right? So if he always was, there is no beginning. That's why this is our story of in the beginning.
Yeah.
But there is no beginning for him. He always was. We also know that Job was actually talking about things prior to Genesis 1. So we really know that there was some things that were going on before you arrived.
Yeah.
That's why we are not the center of attention.
Yes.
Yes.
And yet we totally are.
Yes.
Because he loves us so much. Because that's why he created us. But I mean, in right perspective, you're not the center of attention because there was all this stuff going on without you.
Yeah.
He desired to create you so that he could fulfill his desire to have relationship and fellowship. So there is something that you carry that was not there before. So you are absolutely the center of his attention. But you're not entitled to being the center of his attention because there was a whole lot going on before you got here. Does that make sense? Okay, so in Job, it talks a lot about what was happening beforehand. That's where the third of the angels, all that, you know, all that was going on all happened before we got here. Right? So there's a kingdom. There is a house. There was things that were, I mean, it would be like if you had a family and then somebody comes along and they're like judging you and questioning you about what you're doing when you're wanting them to match your culture. And it's like, we've been around for eternity.
Yeah,
and you've been here for 2 seconds and you've got like, you understand what's going on between me and Ruach and Yeshua and all the angels and all the beings and all the things that are going on.
Right.
Okay, listen to this.
We've never
Kate. Proverbs 9. I'm just going to read this really quick. For wisdom is better than jewels. Nothing you desire compares with her. Okay, jump down to verse 22. Wisdom before creation. Wait, hold on. Are you talking about knowledge? Like some ideas? Let me read what I just wrote, or what this was just written. For wisdom is better than jewels. Nothing you desire compares with her. Wisdom is better than jewels, meaning wisdom's not a concept. Nothing you desire compares with her. Wisdom is a being. Okay?
Okay.
Wisdom, the being, was there before creation. Remember the uncreated realm I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This is crazy. Adonai brought me forth. She's talking. Adonai brought me forth, the first of his way.
Wait, where was this?
Proverbs
9. I didn't mean to ask that out loud. I'm just literally thinking. This has been in Proverbs.
The whole time.
Okay. It's in an edition.
Yeah, I just added a Bible page. From eternity, I was appointed. From the beginning, before the world began, when there were no depths, when you weren't around, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. He had not yet made the land, the fields, or the first dust of the earth. When he set the heavens in place, I was there. When he inscribed the horizon on the face of the ocean, when he established the skies above, when he securely fixed the fountains of the deep, when he set the boundaries for the sea so the waters never transgressed his command, when he laid out earth's foundation, then I was the craftsman beside him. I was his daily delight, always rejoicing before him.
Whoa.
Rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in mankind. Delighting in mankind. So now, children, listen to me. I mean, that's just one thing I found out.
Wow.
Not, I mean, we've known about a third of the angels, but that's not just a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you've got, now we've got Ruach, Yeshua, Yahweh, Lady Wisdom, who delights in mankind and desire to, I mean, it says that she was a playful partner. Why am I getting into all that? I don't know why I got into all that. What
That's
was
fine.
I doing?
It's all
Thank
good.
You.
It's details.
You're the center. You're not the center.
Yeah, you're not the center, but yet you are. But I don't know what I was getting at. Anyways.
That's okay.
You were just talking about before the beginning.
Yeah, so like, when we think of the Holy of Holies, it's not, this is not boundary lines to keep you away. He's trying to cause you to remember what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a family, like a heavenly structure and a way of living that to us can seem far off because there's still an aspect of the veil. But where we're going, there isn't going to be any of that. So why not learn now how he functions? Which that's the purpose of the tabernacle, is to teach you how to function in his presence, not to keep you from his presence.
Yeah.
Why would he teach you how to function in his presence if he didn't want you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like me saying in my home there's a standard, and then you walking away and being like, well, apparently she doesn't want me around because, you know, she doesn't want drinks in her living room.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I actually want you to be near me.
Yeah.
There's just some rules on how we function.
Yeah.
For purposes that you may not be thinking about because all you're concerned about is your drink.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
yes.
There's other things going on besides your thirstiness.
Yes.
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 I mean, that's a stupid example, but you know
what I
mean? Like, there's
an example.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not a boundary to keep you away. It's actually how to bring you in.
Yeah.
And we'll take that boundary line and be like, well, then I guess I'm not wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, it's training and teaching of how to be close.
Yeah.
Good.
Make sense?
Yep.
Okay.
That was so good.
Okay, I talked about that. Another way to do this is to flip our mindset is, what if all of this isn't even about you, but it's for you, for him? Like, maybe it's not even about you being in this presence, He's, because part of this is he's saying, if I go back to the 25:8, Exodus 25:8, have them make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. The first thing we're going to do is, oh my gosh, we're so special. He wants to dwell among us. Mm-hmm. But he said, but it requires you to build a sanctuary.
Yeah.
So what if the whole reason why you have to do all this is for him in the first place?
Yeah.
Because he wants to be here.
Yeah.
So it's not even for you to get to a place. It's for him to get to a place. And
yeah.
he needs you to do it.
Yeah.
What,
come on.
Like, it just, it, everything shifts. Instead of, okay, fine, Mom, I'll understand. Okay, I get it, the boundaries, so that I.
Right.
When in reality, it's so that he.
Yeah.
Yep. That's, it requires you to make a sanctuary for him to be.
Yeah.
That means you, if you are the temple, it requires you to build your sanctuary so that he can dwell. We cannot expect him to come in and dwell within me and not do any of the building for him
mm-hmm.
to come dwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I know that that tabernacle was not just a prayer moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a, well, we invited him in. So now he can perfectly dwell on the inside. There's the dwelling on the inside requires that I build a sanctuary.
Yes.
Yeah. Build a sanctuary. And in my this is just my opinion, I'm going to build it until.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to, because even in this tabernacle, it moved with them. It wasn't like for a moment.
Yeah.
So there's a constant building for him to continually dwell.
Yeah.
Okay?
So good.
It's really good.
Or at least breaking off the mindsets
yes.
of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really want to break off the mindsets about the one-time prayer because we get to get into the altar.
The one time.
What happened at that altar call? We get to find out.
Yeah.
And it ain't what you thought happened. Anyway. I mean, I think. We'll see. Oh, here's another thing. Here's, and obviously we know this, but all of this, regardless of what we think, is based on his terms. Not yours. I mean,
yeah.
It's his terms, not ours.
Yeah.
So, if it's based on his terms and not ours, that means that blows the whole concept of, well, I had good intentions.
Mm-hmm. Or my heart.
Yeah, it's about personal about personal relationship, and it's whatever I define it as.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
No,
yep.
The relationship is his terms, not yours.
Yes. Yeah.
So if it's based on terms, it's not lofty. It's not a good idea. And now I'm not dismissing the walking the way. I'm
yeah.
not saying, well, what, you know, I'm not talking about trying to endeavor and I'm not saying that you don't do that. What I'm trying to cut off is the loophole of, but I'm a good person.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing
yeah.
about this has anything to do with you being a good person.
Yeah.
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 You're not going to heaven if you're a good person.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It has nothing to do with this. The instructions are on how to live with him, not just
yes.
be a good person.
Yes.
So it's not about like, well, but my heart's in the right place. Or another way to say it, and this is my personal conviction. You're gonna have to take that however you feel you're in that. But when people say he knows my heart when I say Jesus, how many times, if you're at the doctor's office, anybody have an odd name? All of my kids have odd names. If the doctor's office says Anaya to Anaya, she's not like, well, they had a good intention.
Yeah.
She's not judging them. She's not going to be mad at them,
but
she's going to correct them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's going to say that ain't my name.
Yeah.
And if they do it again, she's going to be like, Anaya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it gets to the point where it's like, I've told you once. Like I don't, just, but it's not
yeah.
coming from a place of judgment. But any
yeah.
one of you wouldn't
yeah.
want it. How many
yeah.
times would you
yes.
keep going to the doctor's
yes.
office and they say Tanya? I'm not gonna be like,
yeah.
if we would
yeah.
correct, why wouldn't he correct? So it doesn't make any sense if the doctor was like, well, you know my heart. I'd be like, that's fine.
yeah.
If your heart is good. Put
right.
a note on your chart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a hygienist. I get names all the time wrong. I have to put little hyphenations and I have to try to
yeah.
figure out their name. I have
yeah.
to, if
yeah.
my heart's right,
yeah.
then why wouldn't I want to
yeah.
try
yeah.
to understand
yeah.
his culture?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So,
right. Right.
Why did I go down that road?
That's good.
His
good
terms,
road.
Not ours.
Yes.
Okay. He defines not us.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Has somebody said that before?
A lot of people say that.
Oh.
Tanya. Or Tanya, yeah. How, so it says, do not be conformed to this world. How are you going to conform to his ways if we dumb it down to our excuses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, if it is his ways and we acknowledge his terms, then we have to go hard after his terms and his ways,
yeah.
Because then we'll just make excuses that then that doesn't allow us to walk by his terms and his ways.
Mm-hmm.
But again, don't get weird about that when it comes time to the requirement on your side.
Yeah.
You want his terms and his ways when it comes to healing.
Yep.
Yeah.
You want his terms and his ways when it comes time to salvation. You want his terms and his ways when it comes time to judgment. How you guys, how many of you have lied in the last week? And maybe it's not a manipulative lie. Maybe somebody called you on your phone and you didn't answer it. Because you were busy. Liar.
That one I did.
You're able to walk unholy and still have access to the whole kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if you still have the death covenant in mind, you want to you want him to bypass everything you just did this past week to make sure you get to heaven.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want his terms for that.
Yep.
You want his terms to say your son is going to take care of all that I just did.
Yep.
But then you don't want his terms on how to not have to do what you just did so you can actually walk differently and have access to heaven right now.
Yeah.
What if you didn't do that and you could have it now because the tabernacle is now instead of waiting until later anyways?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
That's good.
And he gives exact instructions. Like, it's so simple. He doesn't leave things, like, to your imagination. I mean, it's such exact instructions in all things. Okay. All right. Okay, one more thing I just wanted to kind of overview. Not overview. We haven't even gotten to the review yet, you guys. I'm sorry. What is my time frame?
Several days.
Don't worry about it.
We need
this tabernacle is is detailed, and it was costly in the middle of a desert, right? And it was a place of joy and fellowship. So it's not just about a dwelling place, but it's where he welcomes his people in and provides protection. So think about your life. If you are in the midst of, or a desert, like everything out there is just dry and desert and wilderness and remember how I said wilderness is just not really accepting, it's uninhabitable, it's there's not a whole lot to offer, the wilderness. And he prepares this place of joy and fellowship in the midst of all that is fit for a king, costly and very detailed in the midst of the desert. That's who you are. Like, in the midst of the world of this desert that has nothing to offer, you are costly and detailed.
Amen.
It's that refuge. And it's not just for him to dwell, for the sake of just for him to dwell. It is for joy, protection, and fellowship. Okay, so I just want to make sure that that's kind of the overview as we go through the tabernacle. All right, so I'm going to do some review things, and then we'll move into the veil. Actually, I might have already done all the review stuff. A couple things with review is he works from the inside out. So as you guys have noticed with the tabernacle, he started with the Holy of Holies, and he's moving himself out to the outer court. So... And that's how he works in us. If we're the temple, he works from the inside out. That's why Yeshua can say that it needs to be written on your heart. That's why it's not the concept of I need to live, I need to never lie. You're not going to make it. Because you're not working from the outside in. That's what this is. That's what I'm getting. When you read this, it can seem like, but there's all these boundary lines. When he's trying to say, I'm working from the inside out, you understand the covenant. When it says in Jeremiah, I'm going to write the covenant on their heart. Because it's a way that you live from the inside out. You're not trying to get to him by not lying. You're understanding that it's from within the Holy of Holies that produces all of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is us getting rid of that remnant of religion, because it's the filter of religion that says you have to do these things to get there, not understanding that he's already there working out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We did talk about this, but the devil is in the wide open place. Yahweh's in the details.
Yep.
We talked about this. If you want him in your details, get to know his.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in our rescue cycle,
yeah,
we want him in those details.
Right.
Yep.
And what he's trying to point to us, or this remnant, is to be able to say, instead of crying out for me to come into your details, let me teach you the details from cycle to cycle,
mm-hmm.
so that it's not rescue based,
mm-hmm.
but based on fellowship, joy, proximity, intimacy, fullness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have him in your life on a day to day, or intimately hour by hour, when you don't have him, then you get into a rut, then you cry out for him to know your details.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He does know them, and he's going to show up. That's what's so amazing. What he's shifting us into is, now that I know about your details, could you learn about mine so that when you walk out the next cycle,
yeah.
you'll be better off.
Yes.
Before, yes. Like, it's called prevention versus
right. yeah.
surgery.
Yeah.
So my calling as a hygienist is I offer preventative care. I don't work in a periodontist office where they're having to do surgery after the fact,
mm-hmm.
because their bones is gone, their gums are gone. I'm at the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm at when you don't have a problem.
Yeah.
I'm at how to show you how to never have a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And that it is possible to live
mm-hmm.
a lifestyle without inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just say, no, it's just
mm-hmm.
there. I just,
right.
I, and generationally, I'm just
yeah.
I'm predisposed.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had it, so I'm going to have bone. No, I can teach you how to. You might have markers that cause you to tend towards that, but there is
yes.
instructions
yes.
on how to go
yes.
To go away from that. And it's
yeah.
called prevention. I cannot give you those tools after rescue.
Mm-hmm.
I can save you. I can save your teeth.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't want us to stop at salvation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because then you're just saved from a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I will say this. Once I save your teeth, I'm going to give you instructions on how to keep them again.
Right.
So I don't have to come back to surgery.
Yeah.
So once you're saved, he saved you from a massive heart attack.
Yep.
That doesn't mean you get to just be like, thanks,
come
and
on.
Then keep eating
come
McDonald's.
On. Nice. Come on.
That's right.
Then you'll have to have another savior.
Yes.
You've
yes.
undermined his work. So what he's saying is,
mm-hmm.
is I've saved you from a massive heart attack. Now let me give you the instructions
mm-hmm.
on how to never have one again, and
yes.
to have a restored heart,
yes.
fully functioning, where you can live longer, reverse age,
yes, ma'am.
Have energy,
yep, yep.
see your great grandkid, like it's
come
fullness.
On.
That's
yes.
what his instructions do. And we
yeah.
say, well, I can't believe you would do that to me. I can't believe you would separate myself. No, he's like, no, what I'm separating you from is from your cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm separating you from
come
your
on.
From your salvation
yeah.
cycle.
Yeah.
I'm giving you the instructions of how to live heaven on earth now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. Are we okay? Do we need a bathroom break?
We're good.
No.
We're doing good.
Cat.
She's like, why'd you call me out, Mom?
No, I didn't know I'm making this. So the other thing that happened last week when I was getting all wasted, I really still don't know what happened, but the way just I still don't quite understand what happened. All I have is that the way is a walk.
The way is a what?
Walk. Like, the way is not a moment. It's a way. I don't know. I just feel like he's the truth. That's, like, true.
Yeah. Mm.
Life. Like, there's life. I don't... The way, for whatever reason, is wrecking me, especially with the tabernacle, because there's a way to walk. There's... It's not a moment.
Yeah.
It's followers of the way means we're walking. I don't know why. But anyways. Okay. And we broke off what doesn't matter. How many of you guys did well this past week recognizing when you said it doesn't matter?
Yep.
Yeah.
You guys have the alarms and with the what does that matter? Yeah. Okay. Because we want to continue in that the details matter. So then that would mean nothing. We would never have a reason to say what does it matter. What does it matter breeds hopelessness.
Yeah.
What does it matter is the entryway for death.
Yeah.
But we've said that that's totally normal. We'd be like, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that is the entry point for death.
Yes.
Because it's hopelessness.
Yeah.
Because if it matters, now you have power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the problem. If it matters, now you have responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's why it's a loophole to say it doesn't matter, because it's like out of my control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything Yeshua did was it's in your control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what does it matter is the complete opposite of the kingdom by saying, my hands are tied. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. All right, now we can get into the Torah. Okay. Where did we start? 31, right? Okay, now here's what's interesting. So the first thing that this Torah portion is we're going to go over the veil. If you go back to Exodus 26, the title of it is curtains, right? Now, the reason why I'm bringing that up is because there's actually different types of curtains. I mean, we know that. But literally the word is veil is different than the curtains that are over the tent of meeting. The same word in English, it talks about, I think maybe in our this one, it says veil. But in English... curtain is used for both, but it's two different Hebrew words. The reason why I'm bringing that up is because it matters. I don't know why it matters. I don't have like a teaching on that, but I find it interesting. Why didn't he just say, and then there's this curtain, and then there's this curtain? He says screen, he says veil, he says curtain. But in English, it'll all be one word, and to me, it matters because he's putting emphasis on some things. Okay. So, let's see. How do I want to do the veil? Are you sure we don't need anything? Are you guys okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think some people are getting copied. Mm. Copy just come in. We're doing great. Those were all
ready. Getting ready for lunch. It's gonna be a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're fine, Mom.
Okay.
I had a big breakfast.
I didn't.
Seriously.
Oh, I'm still massive.
I'm with you, Dwayne. Okay, so I don't think we're gonna have time to get into this, but the veil is described in detail with, and I'm bringing this up because Gabe brought it up with hosting about the colors. So even thinking of the hosting, the red, the purple, the scarlet, the blue, and the purple. I'm going to add a fourth color because linen is a color, because linen was always white.
Hmm.
So there are four colors in this veil. There are four faces of God. There are four gospels. Each gospel is written to a different audience. Do you guys know that?
Yeah.
That's why we have four different ones. Same story, but written from a perspective to four different audiences. Let's see if I can remember that. Matthew was written to the Jews. Mark was written to the Romans. Luke was written to the Greeks. John was written for everyone.
That's
probably my favorite one.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
So you'll understand Mark is very action. There's not a lot of parables. It's very Romans were, you know, there's a lot. You'll see it when you see it that way. Luke has a lot to do with philosophy. He was getting after Greek philosophy mindsets. And ultimately, it's revealing Yeshua that he's the highest philosopher. Same with Mark. You can be Mark, Roman, you can be all, you can win the victory, but who's your victor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's how you read it. Matthew, yeah, written to the Jews. Yeshua is the Messiah, right? So, because, and Matthew has the most Old Testament
references,
yes. So, anyways, but so I'm not gonna necessarily get into it like the colors and stuff, but like what Gabe was saying, yes, the colors matter.
Yes.
So the four faces of God, the four colors, the four gospel. This is why I'm talking about 4D. You're not just reading, oh, scarlet, blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's dot connecting.
Yeah.
Why four? Why is four the door? Why is the fourth commandment Shabbat? What has to do with creation? It's everywhere. This links Genesis to Exodus to Jeremiah to Malachi to the Gospels to Revelations. And so when those dots begin to connect, all of a sudden everything becomes alive.
Yeah.
So, all right. These curtains were not separated. So obviously you read, there's no clasp, there's no links, they're just clasped up at the top. So there was no, it's not like a theater curtain. It was one massive, which makes sense then when we get into Matthew, where the veil was torn.
Right.
Because there was no separation in this veil. Okay, let me see how I'm going to do this.
And they were hung on four pillars of acacia wood.
Yep, four. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, and four acacia wood, and then the screen has five. I mean, there's just so much, but yes, there's four. And then I talked to you guys about the cherubim. So every time that's listed, why, you know, and remember, the cherubim are interwoven only on the inner tapestries. So you can only see these angels when you're on the inside. Okay, because we have them on the veil, we have them on the mercy seat, and we have them on the inner linen curtain that were above the tabernacle. Does that make sense?
Do you think they're like the same one?
What?
Like all the cherubim, like they all look the same, or do you think they got like different cherubims?
Oh, like all over? I think that they're all different. But remember, we referenced in Genesis that those are the same. They're a type. So cherubims are a type of angel. So there's a hierarchy and there's different realms to the angelic. Cherubim are a type, meaning they have, just real quick teaching on angels, they can't cross their assignments. So there's like a breed, let's say, of angels that do a certain thing. Cherubim are there to guard. That's what they're there for. You'll see it in Isaiah with the coal, the lips, the cleansing. When you begin to see those things, then you'll understand why he has them in the inner sanctuary. And he had them at the tree. He was guarding the tree of life. So, okay. Okay, I think, I don't know how I'm going to go about doing this, but I want to bring to light everything that we've been reading and being taught about with the tabernacle. Yeshua is in it. So he is everything. He is the lampstand. He is the bread of presence. He is the veil. He is the veil, right? So when we're talking about the veil, we're actually learning about Yeshua. So the other aspect of the veil, it represents not only Yeshua, but it represents your flesh. So that's why your flesh has to be torn for you to have access. Because your flesh won't make it. It's why he was torn.
Can you say that again?
The veil is Yeshua, but is also it's flesh. Yeshua became a man so that he could be torn, so you could have access, which means if he's living in you, as far as the tabernacle, then it represents your flesh.
Had to be torn to
have access.
Okay.
To go in, your flesh has to be torn. So I just want to read this because we will look at the old, there was a barrier, and now through Yeshua, he tore the veil.
Right.
So now we have access.
Yeah.
Yes. not I don't mean but he absolutely tore the veil. But that means he tore your veil. So you cannot go into the Holy of Holies, keep your flesh, and say, well, he did it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If he tore the veil, it is not appropriate for us to say, well, he tore it, so I can come in as my
dirty.
Yeah, I'm not willing to go at the Levar. We're not there yet, but I haven't done I didn't do sacrifice. I didn't get in his presence and eat his bread. I didn't look at the light. Mm-hmm. You just came boldly in your muck, and you think that there isn't going to be consequences for that?
Right.
I'm not saying Yeshua didn't tear the veil, but what did he tear it for if you're to be him? It's not for you to walk outside of him. It's for you to walk as him, which means you need to be crucified and risen again as a new creation so you don't... It's like two becoming one. I don't know how to explain it. It's not outside of you. Well, he tore... Right? We've said it. Like, well, he tore the veil so I can have access. I'm trying to get at this theology that he tore the veil so that you can be separate.
Yeah.
He tore the veil so you can be torn.
Yeah.
You're one and the same. He lives in you. He's not outside of you. We don't want him to be separate until we want him to be separate.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it means when it says we died with him?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. That is the only way you can be a new creation, which going back to the beginning, that's why you're not a man with new clothes. You're a new creation filling up your clothes. We didn't put on an idea. We became a new creation in close.
Amen.
Now I'm going to read this because Hebrews 10:19 through 20, we read this all the time. Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Yeshua. Like, we usually stop there. Like, therefore.
Yeah.
First of all, what's therefore from? Did you read before? Let me read it. After those days, I will put my Torah upon their hearts. And upon their minds, I will write it. I will remember their sins and their lawless deeds no more. That's the context that then says, therefore, brethren, have boldness before you come through the throne of grace.
Right.
Not just have boldness for the sake of boldness.
Yeah.
Well, Yeshua did it. It's when the Torah is written on your heart, it's written on your mind, and by his blood, you now can have boldness.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you become him. Okay? So it also says this, therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Yeshua, by a new and living way, which he consecrated for us through his flesh. I feel like we just need to go to the word here. How many times have we read Hebrews?
Yeah.
Now come boldly. What did he give us access? Absolutely. But how? I want to know how he is, not just what he did.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I proclaim it, but I never really do it. And it sounds good. So I'm trying to find Hebrews. There it is. All right. Hebrews 10, 19 through 20.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Therefore, the as soon as I see therefore, I'm like, well, I got to read what he's talking about, because the title of it says, let us pray boldly in God's presence.
Yeah.
Amen. Let us pray boldly.
Right.
But if it's saying therefore, brothers and sisters,
there
how? Mm-hmm. How do I pray boldly before his presence? I just do it? Okay, therefore is after those days, says Adonai, I will put my Torah upon their hearts and upon their minds I will write it. Then he says, I will remember their sins and their lawless deeds no more. Now where there is removal of these, there is no longer an offering for sin. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have boldness to enter into the holies by the blood of Yeshua. He inaugurated a new and living way for us through the curtain that is his flesh. We also have a high priest over God's household. So it's not separated. Because he did, so I. Because he did, I do.
Yeah.
So I want us to try to shift our minds out of there was a barrier, and then through Yeshua, there isn't a barrier. There isn't. But how do you walk through that barrier?
Yeah.
By a new and living way. That means you can't come in an old way.
Yeah.
Because he consecrated it through his flesh.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it's torn. So that means your flesh is going to be consecrated. Amen?
Amen.
All right. Now, I'm just going to be super, like, simple and detailed. Not detailed. Simple and just kind of bring another perspective. Not another perspective, but just to understand. And we're going to get into this more later with the word that I have. But I want us to ask the question, who and how went behind that veil? So prior to Yeshua, don't get confused on, well, it's torn, so it doesn't matter. What did we already say? It was torn, so it matters.
Right.
Okay, prior to the tearing, who and how did they get in there? Who was it? A priest? And how? Which we haven't gotten into, but there's a lot of how.
Yeah.
Basically, ain't nobody going behind there other than one time a year, one tribe, one high priest out of that tribe, one time a year was allowed to go back there. My point is, if we are to be the one that boldly goes before the throne, be that one tribe,
mm-hmm.
one priest,
yeah.
be that one.
Put that on Facebook.
Yeah. So, right, but does that make sense? I mean, if and you want the benefit of being a priest and a king.
Yeah, right.
You need to be a
yeah.
priest
mm-hmm.
and a king.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even talking about kingship because I haven't even gotten to the Messiah. I'm just talking about just the Levitical priests. If we learn from them to be able to get into the Holy of Holies, then let us be a priest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, now take it a step further. If Yeshua did it, he was a what? He was a high priest.
Yeah.
He also was not from the Levitical line, which means he was from Judah, which means he represented one of the four, which has to do with lion, which has to do with being a king. So he was both king and priest, and what was he in the family line? He was a son. So you can't come in as an orphan. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
We want his presence. He's telling you, can't. Orphans don't belong in my holy place. I don't.
Come on now. No.
Now, let me,
you're good.
Don't record me.
You're good.
There are detailed instructions on how he cares for the orphans.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they were not the ones going into the holy place.
Yeah.
It's not, doesn't mean that they can't, because now we have access to become a son, but that's why you can't act like an orphan.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like you can't act like not a priest, and you can't act like not a king.
Yeah.
So you can't act like, I was trying to think of the opposite of a king, but it doesn't matter. You guys understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that if this is our example, instead of looking at it as separation, well, Jesus did away with all of that. The old was horrible. We only one time a year, one person. So then what are you dismissing Yeshua?
Right.
Yeah.
The Messiah? One time, if all eternity.
Yeah.
One time, ever.
Yeah.
So, like, I can at least grab a hold of one time a year high priest. Like, I can grab a hold of that. It's hard for me to understand the Messiah doing that. But if I'm supposed to be like him, let me start somewhere that I somewhat understand.
Yeah.
If I can barely understand how to be a priest, how am I going to understand how to be like the Messiah? He took it up way notches.
Yeah.
He took it up a way better notch, right?
Yeah. Right.
So start here of what did it take for that priest to get in there? And then I just think about the Messiah being a son.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what was the requirement to get close to him?
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know? Okay. Yes, it was a son who was equal in holiness and divinity, both a priest and king. But then he said, you're going to do greater things than me. So when Hebrews is saying, let us pray boldly, what do you think the message was? not for you to stay an orphan and just try to beg boldly.
Mm-hmm.
It was for you to walk in boldness to pray in his presence, but there was a requirement that the Torah would be written on your heart, that you would be able to walk like a priest, walk like a king, and be a son. It wasn't just to pray boldly.
Yeah.
So there's that entitlement. Well, I have access to just pray whatever I want, or I can, you know, come boldly before the throne and not realize even in that teaching in the renewed covenant had everything to do with walking a new way, living a new way, which is why we can come boldly. But you're not coming boldly as an orphan. That okay?
Yeah.
Let me say, that would be being an orphan with a son clothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I taught you to just pray boldly and I didn't get at the root, if I didn't get at the internal, if I didn't get at the root, it would be you be an orphan and just fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Stay an orphan, put on a son clothes so you can just pray boldly. I don't want to teach that. Be naked, take the clothes off, change your identity, become a new creation, be a son, stop being an orphan, and now you have access to pray boldly. I don't even need to teach you how to pray. That's why it says in the new, you won't even need fathers and mothers to teach you how to do any of this stuff.
Come on.
One day you won't need a teacher. Only now are we under guardian and tutors, but when you walk in full maturity, you won't even need teaching. How? Because you'll be a son. You'll be a king. You'll be a priest. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. This, I have this word, or this note. I have, do we understand? Then my next bullet is brat versus manhood.
Brat
versus manhood. I don't know.
Explain.
I don't know.
Explain.
I don't know where I was going. Okay. Maybe what I'm trying to say is an orphan mentality, faking clothing, is just a brat, an entitled brat. I'm gonna act like let me. So we have a family of seven. Right? Seven? Brewers?
Yes.
Okay. Oh my gosh. We adopt someone and they want all the rights of being a brewer. They want the legacy, the inheritance, they want the food, they want the money, they want the clothes, they want all that. But they don't want to have to abide by any of the chores. They come into the family, all the rest of the family would have to do all the chores, but they're allowed to sit in the room. They don't have to help. That would be like an orphan with clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be you want a son, you want to be a son, but you don't act like one.
Yeah.
That's a brat.
Yeah.
Manhood is being raised from a son into manhood to learn how to be a priest and a king. Mm. That's what I'm getting at. There's a difference there when Hebrews is saying, now come boldly. Coming boldly doesn't mean you get to just be who you want to be and come boldly. It means you transform your life so you can come boldly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think that's where I was going with that.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, all of this, when we talk about coming into the Holy of Holies and you're like, well, why? What does it matter to be in the Holy of Holies? A word is coming with that, but at the end of the day, it's for proximity and intimacy. You're not even coming boldly because you need a new car, right? You're not coming boldly because you need a need met.
Yeah.
Guys, that happens in the outer court. We haven't gotten there yet, but that's not what the Holy of Holies was for.
Mm.
It was for, there is a level of holy intimacy of what's going on in that place. So, just want to put that in perspective too. All right. Oh my gosh, you guys. Then it goes into, so it does the veil, then it goes into the placement. I'm not going to get into it very much, but just, I found it interesting that then it goes through the placement of the things we've already learned about. So there's placement for the lampstand, there's placement for the bread of presence, and there's placement for the altar of incense, which is going to happen later. We learn about that later. But these three areas... Another way to look at this are stations. I know it's going to kind of sound weird, but just thinking about being followers of the way, if you're walking, there's stations.
Yep.
And in that station, you see prayer, fellowship, revelation. So the lampstand being revelation or illumination. You have the bread of presence, which is fellowship. And then the altar of incense is prayer. We haven't gotten to the altar of incense, but we've already talked about the bread of the show bread. He is the bread of life. You have the menorah, which is he is the light of the world. So at every station, you're seeing him and you're learning about those things in order to be readied for what is to happen in the Holy of Holies. It's another way to look at that. Does that make sense? Prayer, fellowship, revelation. My point is don't try to come boldly before the throne if you don't have prayer, you don't have fellowship, and you don't have revelation. Because it's through Yeshua you get revelation. It's through Yeshua that you even have a high priest praying on your behalf. Don't try to come through the... You got there's so much in this. You can't go to the Holy of Holies and bypass the altar of incense. That's what it means by he's the high priest, that his prayers are going up for us. So you're gonna go into the Holy of Holies and not acknowledge that he's praying on your behalf at the altar of incense and not stop there?
Come on.
Yeah. Right.
So or you know, he's the bread of life or having fellowship, you know, whatever those things are, don't bypass those things and then try to get somewhere with bypassing the process.
Right.
Yeah.
And talk about pit process, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I got a question.
I don't have an answer.
I'm sure you do. Where's the defined line? I guess maybe I missed it. There's a defining line between, and I know you said removing the clothes and becoming naked, but from being an orphan to no longer being an orphan, a priest. What is that defined line? I mean, what does that look like practically? Mm.
Maybe when we get to the altar, the answer will be, so practically, I believe that there can be a moment, that moment happens at the altar, which we'll get into, but then it's walking it out. So like, I believe you become a new creation. So like, in a moment, you become a new creation. I don't want to say but. But it's like your flesh or your soul has to line up with your new creation since you're still on earth.
Yeah.
So you're having to walk out sanctification, but you're walking it out from a place of I'm a new creation versus I'm trying to obtain becoming a new creation. So it's not, it's like both. It's like it happens and it is happening.
So is it?
That's good.
It's different from. So like we would be considered Gentiles to a certain extent according to the word, but are you saying stepping out of that Gentile type mentality into a born into kind of like what we were talking about in the sense of being brought up in that culture because you are blood to, I don't know how to explain it in that sense, but are you talking about from becoming a Gentile to into that blood is a mind change? Or am I just confusing this and making it harder?
No, I'm just trying to figure, I just am trying to think of how to answer because it's so... So, I don't think that Yeshua, let me see if I can figure out how to, I don't think that he came to this earth to make Gentiles Jews, and he's not making Jews Gentiles. He's literally breeding a new breed and a new creation. So you are a new being of another realm. Like you have a different DNA that comes from heaven.
So it doesn't matter where you came from or how you step into it. It's the fact of stepping into it is the defining line.
And when you step into it, it can be a moment. It can be in your mind. But I believe supernaturally when that moment happens, your DNA changes. But on Earth, my DNA can change. And then if I don't feed the new DNA... It'll start to Deteriorate. I'm trying to think.
You have to be intentional to be.
Yeah, you have to keep the DNA alive.
Yeah.
I get a new DNA, but if I have a predisposition to cancer, I can be freed from cancer, but then I have to feed.
Yeah.
I have to feed my body from my new creation to remind it you will line up with the DNA. I'm thinking of the word not. It starts with a D. It probably doesn't matter. Deconstruct, decompose.
That's more.
Anyways.
You're expressing.
Not.
Decompose.
I'm thinking of like being corroded.
Disintegrate?
Like disease versus life. It's like we are flat. Deteriorate. Yeah, they're decompose. I don't know. Yes. So because we are still in the shadow of things to come, I believe Yeshua, this is a shadow of the good things to come. Yeshua, that happened. But we are still in a shadow of what's to come. So because of that, we are still in a system that is naturally whatever the word is.
Decaying,
yes. We are in a system that is decaying.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to actively walk out a new creation, because that's why it even says that if you don't, even my rocks will cry out, because creation is groaning for the maturity of the sons mm-hmm. of God. So he's not one. Orphans are not going to change the frequency of earth. But yeah. That's why I believe that being kings and priests are going to change what's around us. So anyway, so it's a moment and it's an activation, because we're not there yet, but we're the catalyst to make it there.
Yeah.
It's like Yeshua came, but it wasn't, I mean, it was finished, but you know what I mean? He came for more to come. So now we're here. So we are the catalyst that changes that. But you can only change it if you're a new creation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't change the decaying of the earth if I don't acknowledge that I am a literal new creation. But I'm not going to get anywhere if I don't feed that new creation, because I am in a system of decay.
Yeah. Right.
So it's both. That's what salvation is, and then walking out, like sanctification and justification to purification. It's like it happened and it's happening at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of confusing.
It makes sense.
Because it happened and it's happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The best way for me to explain it is it happened in your spirit, but your soul and your flesh is still happening.
Yeah.
But what leads it? Because my spirit can be corruptible if I allow my flesh to not be torn.
Yeah.
So then I can reverse backwards and go back out the tabernacle in the wrong way.
Yeah. That's good, Mom.
Did that kind of answer the question?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So there's the areas. We don't want to bypass the areas. Then there's the screen. We read about the screen. The screen has the same three colors. The only thing that I want to acknowledge here is that there's a change from gold to bronze. You guys notice that? So there's gold on the inner Holy of Holies, and then it begins to produce bronze. The reason for that is bronze is there's a lot, but zinc, it's an alloy, and it has everything to do with being moldable and incorruptible at the same time. So the metal, the literal elements of bronze, is saying something to you about how you need to be moldable and incorruptible and endure extreme temperatures.
Yeah.
Because bronze is the defining word for refinement. So that's why the outer side has all the bronze, because you're being refined to gold. Divinity, pure, bronze. There's a lot with that. It also is a picture of Yeshua, who endured the ultimate refinement to be able to produce the divinity and the gold. So that's all I'll say about that. Okay. You guys, we're only at the altar. Because we can always take a break and eat, and then... Or maybe...
However you want to do
okay,
it.
Okay, we'll
hear
get
all
there.
Of it.
Okay, we'll get there. Ah! Okay, the altar. Okay, I'm trying to figure out how I want to start this. So the altar is the first station You come in. Let me just make sure that our language is all the same. The tabernacle is all of it, and we read in this Torah portion the outer fence that separates the world to his presence.
Right.
Okay? That fence is that demarcation from outside him, inside him. Once you step outside of the world and into his way of living, the first thing you're going to encounter is the altar. It's the first setup. There is not one worshiper that would come inside and not be able to bypass the altar because of how big it was. It was huge, and it was front and center, and it was big. Because this is huge. You're not getting past. This is what's so crazy, that he works from the inside out. You guys got to learn all about the Holy of Holies. But in order to understand the Holy of Holies, you will not be able to bypass the altar. Okay? So front and center is the altar, made of bronze, can endure high heat. So I want to, there's two things, just to say this. There is a washing station, and there's the incense. We're going to be reading that, I think, in 30, in chapter 30. So that comes later.
Okay.
Let me say this. The reason why I think that is set up that way is you can't wash yourself unless you go through the altar. This is what religion does. You better clean yourself before.
Right.
All he said is a sacrifice. Through sacrifice, you have access to all of this, but it doesn't mean you don't wash after. So that's the other thing, too, is we'll say, well, he's the ultimate sacrifice. Therefore, what? You don't have to wash?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be at the table of showbread?
Yeah.
You don't have to be in front of a lampstand? It's just, we just stop at the altar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cleaning that happens, which we're going to get to, but put it in perspective that it's after sacrifice.
Yeah.
You don't have to clean yourself to get a sacrifice. We just need to understand sacrifice. But then once we have sacrificed, there's all...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's that whole from the cross to the cross.
That's so good.
Okay? All right. So the altar. This is what I want to break down for us. The word altar, I hate it. I hate it because the altar was a three-step stage that was purple. And it was a stage for the worship team that I came to the altar.
Mm-hmm.
So when there was an altar call, it was an experiential...
Yes.
An absolute circus show.
Yeah.
We have Romanized the altar. We have created a circus show and made an amphitheater out of the altar and said, come to my altar, and made it three steps to a stage to worship the worship team.
Yeah.
Wow. Here's why I want to break that down. Because I am mocking, but it's in me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't understand. I literally didn't know. I thought altar was three steps.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did not know what altar meant. So here I am giving my life over to Yahweh, thinking that I'm serving Yeshua, and I was never taught what he did at the altar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the altar, the brazen altar, is the cross. So we have no idea, if we do not study what the altar did, we have no idea what we're doing at the altar.
Yeah.
I thought I was just crying out, you know, in an emotional experience. Well, the word altar literally is killing place.
Yeah.
Not a good feel-good moment that you cry on.
That's a little different.
The word altar literally is the killing place. Any worshiper, front and center, could not get around the killing place. You want to go past this? You want to get to the whole torn flesh?
Mm-hmm.
Die.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not funny.
But I mean...
If we ever change the name of Kingdom Heirs, that's what we're going to call it.
Die?
That's good.
But the altar, that's the definition of altar.
Yeah.
It's not, I want us to get out of our minds what altar was, because we have dumbed down what altar means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at this killing place, death, sacrifice, atonement, consecration, all of this took place. It might be hard for for me to go into the details, but do you guys remember when I taught on Passover, how the lamb had to be calmed? Because they would bring, you know, they would bring in the lamb, and it had to be an intimate relationship. This blows everything out of the water. You have intimate relationship with the lamb before death?
Right.
He's part of the death, not after the death, and then we just get to dismiss it. Like, anyways, that's another whole thing. But you would look at the lamb, and the priest, when the lamb was put on the altar, in order for it to not get unsanctified by having high levels of hormone or stress, the lamb had to be calm before they could, you know, do what they need to do by slitting its throat. And then, so again, you're looking at this altar and you're understanding all of this, which we'll get into, because this is described through all of the Torah, which we haven't gotten there yet, but just to understand the altar, what was happening. This animal was innocent. I mean, just think about it. You lied. You didn't answer your phone.
Yeah.
Okay, think of it this way. We all love Sukkah. Don't tell me you don't. Don't tell me you don't.
Don't use Sukkah.
But think about it. Yahweh comes down and says, you didn't answer your phone. You lied. I need to take your dog. And you got to watch. Oh, and not only am I going to slit his throat in front of you,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to lay him on this altar, and I'm going to spill his blood all over the horns, and then we're just going to burn him whole. And you got to watch the whole time. If we don't understand this system, we do not understand what Yeshua did in your place.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have access to by when he says, take joy in my suffering. That again, it's not him going through it, so it's outside of you, but that we would understand what the altar is in order to go through what he has for us. What is it is the sacrifice that needs to completely be burned whole to be able to move forward? Not to mention, we're not there yet, but whatever was burnt is what all those instruments that it was talking about, like the shovel and stuff, it was taking the ashes and moving it over to the altar of incense. That sweet aroma was the smoke that came from the sacrifice, which means you can't have intercession without sacrifice. We're not there yet, but we're going to get there. You cannot have one without the other. You cannot have a high priest interceding on your behalf if they were not sacrificed and having the aroma in the first place.
Yeah.
You want to be a sweet-smelling aroma, you need to die.
Yeah. Amen.
Amen. Unless you are fully burned whole at the altar, your ashes will not be used to be a sweet-smelling aroma in intercession. It's all connected. Okay. So again, we see Yeshua because he died at the altar. Like he is the sacrifice. So the cross is the altar. There's teachings on it, but it talks about the horns. You guys will read about it. This is where dot connecting comes in, where it says grab a hold of the horns. It's talking about grab a hold of the power. It represents power. So there's a lot. There's a lot. The horns are a place of refuge, but also only if you die, because it means death too, but it's also a place of refuge. Anyways, there's a lot about horns, but so that's on there. There's the grate, and that was so that the burnings could go through the grate, and then all the utensils. And again, everything was in bronze.
Yeah.
Because bronze was representing, one, that it could handle it, but it was refinement. Okay.
I think that's it for altar.
The main thing with that is that clearly the altar and the description, when you go back and read it, is not three steps at the end of a service.
Yeah.
It is the killing place for what is connected to everything. And again, it's front and center, and you can't get around it. You can't go through the other areas if that does not happen. Yeshua couldn't tear the veil if he didn't go through the altar.
Yeah.
So we want to claim
mm-hmm.
that he tore the veil so I can come boldly, but we want to forget that he was burnt whole. And innocent. Okay. You guys okay?
Yep.
All right. Then it goes into the outer court. I just want to put the size of this into perspective. It was about 150 feet by 75 feet and 7.5 feet high. It was around a little over 11,000 square feet. So I just happened to look up like buildings in Flagstaff. They're 11,000 square feet. And it said that Heritage Square is actually around 11,000 square feet, like the amphitheater area. So just in your mind, to be thinking of the whole tabernacle would be like if you were down at not Heritage Square, not with all the businesses, but the like that inner core of Heritage. Yeah, the actual square is about 11,000 square feet. So that would be like the size of the tabernacle. Now, the Holy of Holies and the Holy Place, which is the tent of meeting. So tabernacle is the whole thing. The Holy of Holies and the Holy Place, which is called the tent of meeting, is the inside. That's important because later on you're going to learn about who was where, and you want to understand where they were in the tabernacle to understand what was going on. But that area, the tent of meeting, was only 7% of the rest of the tabernacle. So you can see kind of the outer court and how wide it was in comparison to the Holy of Holies. That makes sense?
Yeah.
We talked about this, but the demarcation from the outside is a barrier. It means protection. I mean, if you think about it, they're in the wilderness.
Yeah.
So there was animal protection. There was a level of protection. There was a barrier. It really is the difference between world and heaven. Now, this is where it gets fun. Because if the world is out there and inside the inner court is heaven, then that means that there's multiple dynamics and multiple dimensions of heaven that we have not learned because we just say it's just heaven and earth. So there's just one veil or one line and then it's all of heaven. But if the world is separated by heaven and then within heaven there is an entire structure, an entire life that has been detailed outside of the world, how much more detail is heaven than the world? And yet you know every detail about the roads, the car, the window. This is what we see, but forget that there is more details. In comparison to the wilderness, there's more details of what heaven says.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Holy of Holies. I'm talking about heaven is the whole tabernacle.
Yeah.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Okay. There's a single gate.
The food is fine.
We are
good.
Okay, so there's a single gate. There's not like a gate on the east, the west, the south, the north, just the east. Well, I said there's not a gate on the east. There's not a gate on all the other directions. There's four directions. Go back to the four gospels, four faces. Anyways, there's a single gate, which means there's a single way in. You're not going to be crawling underneath the south side linen and find yourself on the inner court. You're not going to be jumping the fence on the north side. There's one way in, and he is the way. Everything about him is in this. You're not getting in without him. There's only one way. You're not going to be able to go around any other way. So I'm kind of prepping this for the word, but there's one way in. Once you're in, there is a wider open place. And it gets narrower and narrower and narrower. Mm-hmm. Okay? So there's one way in. So it's a really wide open place. Then there's one way in. And once you're in, there's kind of a wide space. And then it keeps getting narrower. Okay? I don't think we need to get into that. The only thing I have on here is that the bronze was at the foundation. There is silver all over the top, the silver structures that held the linen drapes between. That just, again, silver has to do with redemption. So from far off, you could see the redeeming place. In the shiny silver in the midst of the desert with how large it was kind of represents that redemption. Okay. So I just have a couple more things and then we'll be done. Anyone of Israel could bring a sacrifice and come inside. So anyone can come inside if you have a sacrifice. Anyone from Israel had the ability to come into the tabernacle and bring a sacrifice. It was a place of worship. many people were able to be in the outer court. Think about all of the scriptures now that says in your courts. How many songs did we sing? I had no idea that I was talking. I didn't know what a court was. In what is that? In your
better is one day.
Better is one day in your courts.
Yep.
Better is one day in that place than to be out in the world. It's not even talking about the Holy of Holies yet. It's better for you to be in his courts. Anyone with a sacrifice could come in and be a part of the inner courts, be a part of the outer courts. Okay? The only one that was able to go in the Holy of Holies was the priest. So this goes back to what I was teaching 5 hours ago. Okay? Anyone can be in the outer, but a priest can go in. Okay? So, a few priests had access to the holy place. All others met God in this place, in the court, in the outer courts. The reason why I'm setting this up, and this is the word. Actually, let me look it up so I can just read it really quick. Sorry, guys, I should look this up. The reason why I feel like this is significant is because I feel like this is going to define kingdoms. I mean, if we haven't been defined, but I feel like this just adds. Huh? Yeah. shoot. Well, this is interesting. I'm reading out of Mark. I didn't plan for this. That means that he's dealing with us Romans.
Come on.
Okay. Oh, wow. It's the high one. Sorry, you guys get a little glimpse into my craziness. Okay. Mark, there's only like four parables, so this is interesting. It's in the parable, but you know the parable where it's talking about sowing into the ground?
Yeah.
And then at the end, and others are the ones sown among the thorns. They have heard the word, but the worries of the world, the seduction of wealth, and the desires of other things, this is the end of it. Choke the word, it becomes unfruitful. And those are the ones sown on good soil. They hear the word and accept it and produce fruit 30, 60, and 100 fold. The word that I have has to do with 30, 60, and 100 fold. And I want you to think about the tabernacle. 30 fold are the worshipers in the court. Everyone can be in the 30-fold. I don't mean everyone in the world. You have to be a follower of the way. I'm saying Christians, followers of the way, 30-fold living, outer court. But do we want 60-fold? Mm-hmm. Holy place. 100-fold, which does not match the algorithm. Did you guys catch that? To me, that would be 90-fold, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's 100-fold. What did Yeshua give you access to have more than? A lot of people have a hard time with that parable because they think, well, that means that Yahweh says you only get 30, you only get 60, you only get 100, and I love some people and I don't love others. Here's the word that I have. Don't want 100-fold revelation, but walk like a 30-fold Christian.
Yep.
Don't want the 100-fold lifestyle, but walk like a 30-fold worshiper. Because the 30-fold can bring a sacrifice and be in the outer court, but we are called to be priests. We are called, we are on a journey on how to be kings and priests and to actually, if only a few get in, followers of the way, and he's the way, then only a few are going in. And to be encouraged that there's only a few, because all of them had access through sacrifice to be in the 30-fold. But we want the things of the 60-fold, of the 100-fold.
Yeah.
So if the 30 is outer court, holy place is 60, what's the 100? Is it
the holies,
okay.
Past the veil. But what I saw at that is that it feels good at salvation. That's just you stopping at 30. So to give another level of language to everything we've been talking about, it may not be wrong to stop at salvation, but why? When you have access to come boldly and receive the hundredfold. But a lot of us want the hundredfold, but don't want to walk the way to get there. We want to stay in the outer courts.
Yeah.
Or potentially claim all of that and never even come in to the outer courts and live in a tribe and just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So I feel like that was a word for us to understand even the tabernacle of what you have access to is the 30, 60, and 100. And that's the journey that we're on, that if we're the remnant and there's a few, that's why there was only one priest out of everyone. I'm wanting to encourage you, don't let that be a demarcation or a barrier that you can't be the priest out of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If they could, if one was appointed,
mm-hmm.
why can't you be appointed? Why not you be the one that can go after the 100 instead of being with everyone in the 30?
Right.
Okay. Oh, that's it.
I'm like wrecked for so many reasons.
Yeah. And all of this was so that they could share their everyday lives with him. Because they not only that, they camped right outside of it. Can you imagine just heaven right there, just access right there. And then all you have to do is come. Like I just, and it was movable. He didn't say you got to come to me. He was like, I'm going to dwell with you in your everyday life.
Yeah. I was just thinking out loud, and I think it's kind of it's a unique perspective on Earth, but, and I'm sure you guys feel this way, but when Mom preaches or teaches or goes through the process of diving in intimately with the Father to give a message, as her husband, I like marvel at my bride in her level of intimacy and what it produces because she goes after the details of everything. Like, do you guys feel that way when she teaches? You're just like marveling. No, this is a good example. But the unique perspective is as her husband.
Yeah.
That's what the body needs to aspire to be, to where our groom marvels at how detail oriented we are to be able to witness who he is to other people. If she was going to teach a message and was like, well, there's some stuff with this and there's some things associated with that, and it was vague and no intimacy whatsoever, we'd all kind of be like,
yeah.
Well, no, we'd probably be all excited because it wouldn't be a killing place. It'd be a 5-point message on how to be more powerful in your prayers, and you go home all encouraged.
And that could be true, but as her husband,
sure, right.
I marvel at this.
Yeah.
So, like, what? How is the Father? What kind of bride does he want us to be?
Yes.
And what example do we have that she's setting her worldly needs aside, sleep, food, whatever, she hasn't even eaten yet, you know, whatever the case may be, setting time aside, going to the killing place throughout the week to bring that type of detail, and what kind of example is that for us, right? It just reaffirms that being detail-oriented and what he marvels at. And I can tell you right now, because with the heart of a husband, I can tell you right now, he doesn't marvel at the easy, wide open, lackluster, vague, like bypassing his details, right?
I don't remember when I preached about it, but it was reminding me about smell.
Yes.
Like that when he judges us, that the word is he's going to smell you.
Yeah.
He's not going to look at you. He's not going to read you. He's going to smell you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's making me think about that. Like, what smell is produced at the altar of incense, which we haven't even gotten to yet, if you're not in that level of that sacrifice, which would be the killing place, or like what you're talking about, versus marveling at the heat that going around. There's no smell there.
I mean, so many things. They're, like, this is a recording that I feel like, I almost feel like this message is defining, and because of the timing of it, and because of Hanukkah, this is something that we're all going to need to go back to, because this took us so much deeper, because so much of what she taught and released makes me realize how much lack of intimacy because of what I haven't known until she released it.
Right.
I mean, the fact that boldness is basically predicated on Torah means we haven't even been bold about anything yet without the Torah.
Yeah.
We have not had the capacity, whatever boldness we thought we had,
been bold for another,
was not really boldness, because we are now walking through the process of Torah being written on our heart, which is the foundation of boldness.
So what kind of prayers do we get to have now? Yeah. You know what I mean? That's why we don't see power anymore.
Right.
And, like, I was looking at this sign that we have up here. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I just was thinking about that while she was preaching, because that is when your life is about serving Him, and that is the direction that your life energy goes, then it eliminates all of these, like, stop at salvation. That's not... That has to do with you being satisfied. You stop because you're satisfied.
Yeah.
Whereas when you serve Him, it takes satisfaction out of it.
Yeah.
So to be a company of people that aren't concerned with our own satisfaction because we're serving Him, and when He gives His instructions, that's like the key to sustainability. Think about it. If He built the tabernacle and just welcomed you into it, He would always have to keep building the tabernacle.
Right.
He would have to tear it down and set it back up as they move through the wilderness.
Right.
He would have to do that because He's not teaching you how to build it.
Yeah.
Right? So His instructions are literally the key to sustainability. If I teach my sons how to drive, they can drive wherever they need to drive. I don't want to come pick them up and give them rides everywhere all the time.
Right.
Right? The instructions of teaching them how to do something. It's like, would you rather get a fish or would you rather learn how to fish?
Right.
It's like the ark. He taught Noah how to build an ark. He didn't just build him an ark. Mm-hmm. Right? Sustainability is in His instructions. And when we see the example of what's being taught about what detail-oriented and intimacy and absolute pursuit in serving Him... Because she could do this all for herself, right? But in serving the Lord, it's pursuing all of that to convey it to everybody else. And that's all a result of, like, getting into the details of His instructions, which totally unlocks. Like, I'm just sitting here reflecting on, like... Like, thinking of a lamb... And, like, we don't understand, unless you understand this, what's taking place in a tabernacle. You don't understand. We don't understand who Yeshua is and what He did, which means we don't understand the destruction and the corruption that we carry in our DNA. We don't understand that. And to think of a lamb, that you have to be intimate with the lamb before the sacrifice. Like, we don't understand those things. So that's what it means when it is such an honor to be here in the midst. We are in a literal tabernacle, separated from all the nonsense that we've been talking about. We are literally in an ark, separated from all the nonsense and the destruction of whatever. It's what gets me so fired up about it, is people just don't. They're satisfied to stay in the place they're at because they don't want to go to the killing place and they don't want what's beyond that, right? But when we start to follow His instructions, it unlocks, it liberates you from being religious. The ones that are in bondage to religion are accusing us of being religious when we have pressed into a deep place of intimacy to actually understand what Yeshua did.
Yeah.
It's actually religious to say, I don't want to go to the killing place, but I want to use his killing place so that I can do whatever it is that I want to do.
Yeah.
Like, have a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. Like, for something so
small,
utilizing that. What I mean by that is utilizing him being at the killing place to say, I'm free now. That's like saying, I'm glad you're the lamb and you went to the altar so that I can live outside the tent.
Yeah.
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 That's
right. What's the point? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the Maccabees, like Yeshua and the Maccabees, if you think about it, they had a culture of death. But it doesn't stop there. Yeshua died so that we could have life. The Maccabees were willing to die so that we can all sit here right now engaging in what we're engaging in. But so many people, it just stops at a culture of death. Right? For what? Die for what? They're not going to do it. And so they're stuck in a place of bondage to literal religion and not understanding. And it is so encouraging because we are in a literal narrow place.
Yeah.
That 7%, that one priest, that is what everyone in here is called to do. And I would even, when you learn these type of things, it's like if you settle for less than that, then you're just playing games.
Yeah.
You're just messing around, right? I want to be looked at by the Father like I look at her when she gets intimate with the word. I want to be looked at like that. So if we're not doing that, then what are we doing?
Right.
We're just go outside the walls and be part of the wide open place and do whatever you want. Right?
Yep.
And this is part of what our ancestors were willing to go to war over. Because they understood through the details and through the instructions, and they understood what happened in the tabernacle, that they were willing to go to war over it. Most people, they're not going to go to war over anything. They have no conviction of anything. So.
Well, maybe. To put us out.
Anyways, I just want to take. We went to such a depth. I want to take us back out so we can realize the value of what Yahweh's doing. And I think it's not just what she released, but it's the synergy of the timing of it, and the importance of being in a home and the environment that was set as a tabernacle, and us understanding really how much we're liberated by His instructions. When all the noise outside in the wilderness would make you think otherwise or say different, that we know what it is and that we value that. Amen?
So to just kind of launch off of that, I just wanted to continue to just carry that kind of weightiness with the sacrifice, and I want us to kind of make tithes and offerings a little bit more practical, but I want us to connect something to our tithes and offerings, and I want us to think about what is it that we've been intimate with that needs to be laid down. Yeah. What needs to be laid down at the killing place? What has He been pressing on? What is He bringing up in us literally during a time of dedication? Like that's what Hanukkah means, right?
Yeah.
You guys remember Mom releasing on that was that it literally means to dedicate, a time of dedication. And so like if we have an opportunity to lay down something in us that we have become so familiar with or intimate with that He's saying it needs to be laid down at a killing place, like identify what that thing is. And then once you've identified that, I want you to tie that to your tithes and offerings as like that first step in walking that out. Because I don't, I know that there's a lot of things that we can tie ourselves to and then not put our money where our mouth is and not want to walk out the process and not want to do the work that it takes to follow up. And so I want us to tie those two things together, keeping in mind that, I mean, American-wise, we're stepping into a new year, too. Like, this is the last opportunity to really lay some of those things down as we get to step into another opportunity to begin again. And so just thinking about, like, what is it that he's telling me to follow through on that maybe he's pressed on over and over, that now we're at a time of being dedicated or rededicated and positioning ourselves, realigning ourselves to really get to a place where we can be fully submitted unto what's next. So take a minute and think through that. And I know that maybe not everybody has like their checkbooks and stuff up here. So we do have the text to give. I think it's 928-288-4547. Pulling that out of memory. But if you guys need that repeated, we can connect on that. But if you need to do something.
I have a bucket.
We
want to pass
it. We do.
So if you don't have what you're used to, you can still use your phone, find something, and let's like, be intentional about that opportunity.
Well, I don't want to pull anyone out of where they've been sent from the word and Amber's activation as well, because I can see people are... Can you hear me over there? Okay. I'll be louder. I was just saying I don't want to pull anyone out, which is why I'm trying to be soft in what I speak, just because I can tell that there are... I can tell that there are things that are connecting for us as a family that maybe haven't connected before. I can feel a tangible, maybe, it's like how we'll talk about moving from a revelation, right? Where there's revelation and it's good, but it doesn't matter if you don't take it and apply it and act from that revelation. And I feel like there's something about the depths that we were able to go to and everything that Dad was speaking to as far as that combination of dwelling, timing, being inserted into this word now, that I think Mom said this at the beginning of the word, that this has been hosted. So because this has been hosted, it's been hosted for you to move from that 30-fold into that 60 to develop the resolve to move into the 100-fold. I want us to be able to move from this, I don't even know what to call it. Word doesn't feel right. I want us to be able to move from what's been hosted on his behalf for you, for him, and let it be what develops a resolve in you to step into that next. Like, we know that we don't end with salvation. That's the 30-fold. Yahweh said that at the beginning when he gathered a group of people and called them his remnant and said, I've set you apart because you're not meant to stay at the 30-fold. And you know that. And I'm reminding you
of what of the place that has been that I need you to prepare for me. Right? So in the awakening of that remembrance, there has been such a press on you to wrestle out a mindset of staying at the, not even at the outer court, but of camping your tent outside of the tabernacle. That hit my spirit so hard because I know that that has been the life that I've lived. I know that in my lack of intimacy and knowledge, like absolute knowledge, that I took that sacrifice so that I could set up a tent alone outside of a place that was established for me to dwell in so that he could have a place to reside. And now that my eyes are open, but also that there is something being hosted and it's calling us forward, that the more revelation, the more it moves us into action, right? Do we feel that, like, stepping out of any complacency in the 30 or any complacency in the, I like my tent space. Mm-hmm. Like, even when we're called to a weekend like this, where it could be like, I like my tent outside. I know there's been a place that's been cultivated and set aside and hosted.
Yeah.
I know that, but I want a tent that stays out here.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reality to what we're doing and what's happening that mirrors what he's reminding us of. There's so much purpose and intention in all of it. You could hear that throughout the word, even when it came to the reality of having to be a son.
Yeah.
My mind was all over the place in this word. All over the place in, I'm going to use the word again, but in gratitude, because I'm thinking, if I hadn't experienced, a call to sonship, then I wouldn't be in a place to then have access to all of the rest that we literally have now, meaning he's continuing to add, but then point us back to the foundation every time. Like the foundation even of our history, going back to what Dad released of, do you have a new value for what's been established, for covenant life, for covenant family? So moving into the rest of this weekend, not only carrying that value, but allowing that resolve to bubble up in you and activate it immediately. Activate what that looks like. Don't, the portion is over, the word, the teaching is done, and I'm going to, in my heart, put my tent out here. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Because there's a way, there are so many ways to activate this word right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can move as a family into that 60 and that 100. We literally can move together, especially when this time is being hosted. Right? Because all of those intentions are a part of everything that was just released.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.